Welcome, everyone, to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. You're listening to myself, Justin, and Jeremy from hardblock.com.au. Contact Hardblock if you're interested in finding out how to pay as low as 99 sats for your Bitcoin withdrawal fees. In today's episode, we'll focus on using a password manager to upgrade your Bitcoin and online security. How's it going, Jeremy?
Pretty good, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. So, I guess this is a bit of a follow-up to the most recent privacy-focused episode we did, which was all about private email.
That's right.
And of course, part of that was to say that you should probably also be using anonymous aliases in couple with your private email. But that means there's a lot of stuff to remember. There's a lot of different aliases or potential email addresses per website you use. And so I guess if some of that doesn't make sense, perhaps go listen to the private email podcast episode that we did. But if it does make sense, I guess you need a way to store all these things, don't you? You need a way to be able to remember your passwords and all the associated emails and, of course, the websites. And it's kind of what a password manager does.
Yeah, I think a password manager is a great place to start for someone who has never really put any kind of thought or time into their internet security and privacy, which was basically me, I'd say, 4 or 5 months ago. You know, yeah. So if you're like a Windows user, an iPhone user, and you use Gmail, and you're kind of just storing your passwords into the browser, maybe, or maybe using the exact same password for everything, I think a password manager is a fantastic place to start because you don't have to do a lot. Like, you can just start, set the thing up, maybe you just put one very significant account in there. But I think from my perspective, it's the first thing that I did, but it's actually something where it actually saves you time. So you get some time back. So it is a little bit of time setting it up, thinking about how you're best going to utilize it. But then once you do set it up, it saves you time because it's so easy to log in. And another huge advantage is, let's say you need to set up a new computer, because I was doing that, trying to try out new Linux distributions. All of a sudden, you put the password manager in and you're good to go. You've got all of your accounts ready. If you want to share stuff with your partner, for example, that's all doable. We'll get into the details. But I just think there are other things in privacy that, you know, to be honest, are just generally more work. Like, a lot of stuff like Google and Apple is very convenient. But I'd say a password manager is one thing where it's actually easier. Like, the secure thing is also the easier thing once you've set it up.
I agree with that completely. Really, all you need to remember is your email that's associated with the password manager, your password to get in. And if you have something like two-factor authentication set up, you don't need to remember that. You just need to have that as a second way of logging in. But then the rest of it is all there, contained in the single app.
Yeah.
There's a few things that made me decide to switch to a password manager when I went down this route quite a while back. And one was that I was storing everything in my browser. So whenever it said, "Do you want me to remember this password?" I'd say, "Well, of course, because I'm not going to be able to." That's all stored, unfortunately, though, in clear text. So if you get onto someone's computer and you open up their web browser, you can just search, or not search, you go into settings, you go into whatever the security section is and the password section, and you can see all the passwords that are there. So if you use a shared computer, or if there's any chance that someone else could ever get onto your computer, none of that's encrypted. None of that's, you know, stored with a password or something like that. It's all there in clear text, which for a remote attack also makes that sort of stuff accessible if someone is able to hijack your browser, for example.
Like through a browser extension.
Through a browser extension, exactly right. And so that, or even just going to a malicious website and it downloads something on your computer that you're unaware of, and that kind of can hijack the browser. So yeah, knowing that the browser password manager essentially that's built in is all clear text kind of was very concerning to me. And also then learning that the most prominent in quotations hack is actually just a brute force attack where people get a bunch of information like usernames or email addresses, as well as passwords that have been leaked in a data breach, and they just pair them together, spray them across a bunch of different prominent websites, and wait until there's some alignment of a username, email address, and a password, and they get access. So once I realize that, as long as I can prevent that from happening and do it in a way that's not stored in clear text, I'm improving my security hugely and obviously making my job a bit easier as well to not have to remember. What I had was a bit of a system where it's like, I have a certain thing that's always in my password, and then depending on the website or my login details, I kind of change the end of it. But that's not very good because, firstly, you have to remember that. And secondly, if anyone ever figures out those components, they then know all of your passwords to everything. So this was a much better way of doing it with a password manager.
Yeah, it's a really good point because, you know, some of the advantages of being able to use really secure passwords, you could argue you could do the same thing in Firefox, for example. And I think you can sign into Firefox and sync all of your passwords across all of your devices. So, like, some of those features are there. But as you say, it's really not a secure way of doing that.
Mm.
And yeah, like in terms of long-term sustainability, it's not the best way to do it. Another advantage of a password manager is you can store like your credit card in there and, yep. and just click a button and all the details fill out. So it saves you the need from having to use PayPal, for example, paying the extra fee or the merchant paying the extra fee and providing that extra data to some extra third party. So yeah, it just, there's this kind of really convenient place where you can put all your stuff that you know is secure. I find I put bits of information that I need to keep somewhere, like an account number that I might need to type in somewhere, like my mobile phone account number. You know, I was just having it in like an open, unencrypted note previously. Now I put it as a secure note in my password manager and know that it's there and it's really easy to find. So
absolutely,
there's a lot of things you find. There's not just a password manager. There's other features you can use as well.
That's very true. So I guess to sum up in some way, the way I like to think of quite simply is that the reason you would use a password manager is because when we generate passwords, I say we as in like all humans, we're terrible sources of entropy. So we're terrible sources of randomness. Anything that we try to do randomly usually has some sort of pattern in it. And especially if someone who knew us, they could probably guess maybe perhaps what that pattern was. And especially with things like artificial intelligence, machine learning algorithms, they're pretty good at knowing what sort of things humans like to do in terms of passwords, because that's a pretty lucrative thing to try to crack. So I guess the point there is that we're bad sources of randomness, and also our memory is fallible. And unfortunately, if we forget a password, can't log into an account, and then have to reset the password or change it again, we normally revert back to something that is easier for us to remember, which is normally a reused password. So those are the two prominent reasons, I think. Bad sources of entropy, memory is fallible. And a password manager just removes both of those things from the equation. It lets you generate unique passwords for every site you go to, and it remembers it all for you.
Yeah. And I think it's probably just worth highlighting what going to that entropy point and just explaining, you know, why that's a problem. So most passwords are encrypted with the same encryption as like a Bitcoin private key in terms of, you know, the hashing. But what happens is if there's a data breach, a whole database can be developed of all the passwords that everyone's ever really used. So it's actually quite easy. If someone wants to hack a password, they can just go check, is it the same as any of the passwords that have ever been used in history? That's why randomness is very important, and a long password is very important, because the longer the password, the more computations are required to try and break it. And the more random it is, the less chance that someone's ever used it before. So yeah, it's kind of good to just get that in your mind. That's why A, it has to be long, and B, that's why it has to be random. Because if you've made an association, like maybe it's some flowers in your garden or something that you like, but probably someone else has made that association in all of the passwords of the 8 billion people in the world. And so if it exists already, it's a very simple process for a hacker to look it up in a database and then try and hash it and go, oh, yep, that hash matches. The other thing to consider is a Bitcoin miner is a hashing machine. If someone wanted to, they could take one of those and try and crack passwords with it. Yeah. It's kind of basically the same thing, right?
That's right. I don't think they could do it with an ASIC, but someone could generate like a piece of hardware that does exactly that and said, well, rather than having this hash to look for Bitcoin blocks, I want a hash to look for passwords in this database. Yeah, that's definitely possible.
It's the same kind of thing. So you've got to be thinking a bit ahead of, because, you know, like some of my older passwords, which were like 6 or 8 characters, which were fine at the time, it's too easy for computers to crack these days. So we have to be thinking ahead and like, how do we keep these really strong?
That's right. Generally, the consensus that I've seen through a lot of password managers, as well as in like their marketing material, as well as a lot of people in the know in terms of privacy security online, especially like in the Bitcoin space, the general idea is that you want a password that if it's alpha, numeric, and symbols, and even with upper and lower cases, you'd still probably want it to be around 12 to 16 characters long to give you some future proofing and to be able to mitigate any kind of brute force attack from a relatively sophisticated, resourceful actor. Now, that might not be a lot of your passwords, but at the same time, you don't want to get into the habit of using insecure passwords for that one thing that is really important. So unless you're putting 12 to 16 digits with alpha numeric symbols and upper and lower case and changing that for all of your logins, you're basically leaving yourself open to a potential brute force attack. The equivalent of that, because sometimes we like to use pass phrases, so using words, like spoken words rather than alphanumeric strings. If you were to use words, generally speaking, it should be around 5 to 6 words long. And that's going to give you an equivalent kind of security, but it's a bit easier to remember. However, if you do it for a bunch of different websites, it becomes very difficult to remember. Yep. So again, you want some sort of equivalent between those two, which for the human brain is just not fathomable to do. But a password manager makes that really easy.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the older websites, like my bank account, I can only put up to 16 characters, which is what I did, which is surprising, right? Like my bank limits it to 16. But in MyGov, you can put 64 characters.
Mm.
So I put a 64-character password, and it's no extra effort for me. I just click the same button, and it's just like I don't have to do anything different. The only time where you might want to use the words is, let's say there's some sort of password that you need to transfer to like your phone or your TV that you might need to type in. 64 characters of random characters is not ideal for that, but yeah, you might do the five word thing in that situation.
I don't want to dox myself too much, but when I have to give my partner the Wi-Fi password and it's a bunch of different characters, and then we get it wrong and we have to do it again, and even when you're reading it off the screen, you can get it wrong. But if it's just like five or six words with a space in between, or even without a space in between, that's really, really easy to transfer and very secure as well.
Yeah. So some of this stuff you kind of figure out as you go, but the general premise is long, random passwords that are unique to that login are going to be much, much safer than any other alternative.
Definitely. So what do we suggest in terms of password managers? Because there's a lot out there and there's various reasons that they might be, you know, better or worse than their competitors. But yeah, what do you tend to use?
Well, you know, we say this every time. This is not an affiliate program, so we're not promoting or getting any money for saying this. But essentially in the community, everyone seems to use Bitwarden. That's the one I use. And I just find it's a fantastic product. It does what it needs to do, but it also does a heap of other things like enabling you to store your credit card in it. You can actually, I think you have to have the paid. I have the paid version, which is very reasonable. You can send encrypted files to people.
That's right.
With a timer. Mm. So you might want to say, I'm going to send this thing to Justin. And if he doesn't get it within 40 hours, too bad. This file disappears from the internet. So I found Bitwarden very good. The extension works in Chrome and Firefox and all browsers based on those platforms. There is a mobile version of the, you can get a Bitwarden app. So sometimes I use Bitwarden to like the app in my phone to copy and paste. Like let's say I wanted to download the ProtonMail app and then put my ProtonMail password into my phone. I downloaded the Bitwarden app, copied it from Bitwarden and pasted it into ProtonMail because it would have taken forever to type it out.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's got everything I need. I didn't, to be honest, try other ones just because everyone in this space seems to recommend Bitwarden. And actually there is an episode on Opt Out podcast with a guy from Bitwarden. So if you do want to listen to some of their philosophy and more technical details of what it can do, you can go on to look up that podcast on Opt Out and listen to them as well.
Yeah, that's definitely worthwhile checking out. I'll perhaps even link it in the show notes so you know which one we're talking about. I use Bitwarden as well. I've used LastPass before, so I might be able to shed some light on the difference between the two. But the reasons that Bitwarden really stands out for me, and you probably get used to me saying these kind of words, is that it's open source. So their code and their claims about how their software works are verifiable and auditable, and they are quite frequently verified and audited by the community as well as adversaries like their competitors. It has a zero knowledge end-to-end encrypted model, which means that your sensitive data is protected before it even leaves your device, which means even if you're using the Bitwarden server to store things like your password details, they don't have any access to those details. They can't see what they are. That also means that you're taking on some level of responsibility. They can't ever restore those details for you if you happen to lose your password or forget what email you meant to log into your Bitwarden with, or you've got two-factor authentication set up, but then you lose that. So having backups of your password manager through Bitwarden is really, really important because they can't see anything, they can't access anything, which means they can't help you if you lose it. What Jeremy mentioned there as well in terms of accessibility is really important for me with Bitwarden too. So it's accessible on essentially all browsers as well as all types of devices and platforms. There's also both an online version, so you can log in and have it stored in their server. That way you can access it from anywhere. But there's offline versions too. So you can just download a little database file that's encrypted and you can put that on any kind of device you want and store it somewhere else. If you're really advanced, you can even self-host your own Bitwarden server. So rather than logging into their servers controlled by their staff, you're logging into your own server. But then you need to do things like making sure you've got a backup redundancy and internet that's always on and so forth. The other part is free to use. A lot of great features in their free version, but also their premium is very relatively cheaply priced and with a lot of extra features too. Like you said, sending files that are encrypted, you can do that with the premium. But with the free, you can send text that's encrypted.
Yep.
Not a file, but still kind of useful as a bit of a messaging or a transfer protocol. There's another really cool thing that I use Mine for, which is like a bit of pseudo inheritance planning. So in the premium version, you can set up an emergency contact that will be able to get access to your account if you don't respond within a certain amount of time. It's kind of like a dead man switch, or maybe it's like the opposite of a dead man switch. So I'll give you an example. So I've said to my partner, all right, look, if I die or I don't come home or I'm gone for a really long time and you need to get access to passwords that I have, all you need to do is you go to this website, which is the Bitwarden website, and you request emergency access for the account. So that will actually send me an email saying your partner has requested emergency access to your account. You need to click this button within the next 90 days to deny that. And if you don't deny that within the next 90 days, they'll get access to your account. Now you can set up that in various ways to say they only have read access, or you can even say they get full takeover access where they're now the owners, they can reset the password, they don't need to know the original password. And so that's a really, really cool feature. You don't have to use it that way. I'm just saying, like, it's an extra thing that you can use a password manager for to make your life a bit easier without having to give all your passwords to everyone before you die or go missing or something like that.
Yeah, it's just the fact that they've thought about things like that, the fact that they've gone through the effort of allowing self-hosting, even though they offer a great hosting feature, some people don't want it. I think it's on Microsoft Azure. You know, the fact that they allow you to self-host is really cool. Like, it just speaks to their values.
Definitely.
And I think there's other ways, like, you can, if you have a partner, you can get a shared account and, like, see everything or, you know, control it, I guess.
That's right. It's another way to do it.
Yeah. So there's some pretty good stuff there. Yeah. But I guess I wanted to touch on a point you said around they can't see anything.
Mm.
I believe all they can see is how many logins you have.
Yes. Sorry. That's true. When I say they can't see anything, it's more like the passwords that you put into that database. They can't see what those passwords are.
But that means that if you, so the way it works, and we haven't really got into that, but is you put in a master password,
mm-hmm.
which unlocks your password manager. And then basically when you go to a website, you click the Bitwarden button essentially, and it puts the password in for you. And you can even press Control Shift L.
Yes.
And
it's that life does changing that too.
That was very handy that we've discovered that. But if you lose your master password, nobody can recover it.
Correct.
So you kind of want to think, because the Bitwarden password itself that you put in probably needs to be words.
Yes.
Because you're going to type it in every day.
Yep.
Every time you open your computer and open up your browser. So that's one you want to think about and test a couple of times to make sure you haven't screwed it up. Because if you lose it, there's no way of recovering that fault.
Exactly. And I would, given that you're going to have so much useful information in there for yourself, I would treat that password as kind of like your seed phrase for your Bitcoin. So you would maybe stamp it in steel, or you would have it written down somewhere physical. You might even have it geographically distributed in a couple of places in case something burns down or gets flood damage. And the point being is that if you can't get back into your Bitwarden account, at least you can go then restore from that backup. Now, to maybe make it a little bit more complicated, unfortunately, if you have two-factor authentication, you can treat that as kind of like being a passphrase in addition to your seed phrase if it were a Bitcoin wallet. So what I mean by that is you back it up as well, but keep it separate. So you'd have your Bitwarden password somewhere stored, and you'd have your Bitwarden two-factor authentication recovery somewhere else stored, but both physically. That way you can restore both. Kind of similar to what you do again, Bitcoin. Seed phrase, passphrase, keep them separate, but have them written down, please.
So depending on your kind of paranoia, you can take this a long way, right? Like, you can get a YubiKey, which is kind of like a hardware wallet for passwords.
Yeah, true.
And you can use that with a Bitwarden.
Yep.
The only problem is if you don't have that YubiKey or you lose it, then you can't use your Bitwarden.
Yes,
you
know, but so you can back that up as well.
Yeah, and you could have two or three or five of them.
Exactly.
But yeah, so you can take this a long way. But the key point is getting your head around, okay, this is, I'm responsible for this. If I lose this password, nobody can help me.
Exactly.
And I think once you kind of, and it's you know, it's the same as Bitcoin, right? But I think once you set it up that way, and just that, I think that's the bit that takes the time to allow people to get started.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, because you do have to set up the master password straight away, and it needs to be secure but memorable. And you need to make sure you log out, log in, make sure you can actually make it work, that you've remembered it correctly, you haven't typed it incorrectly.
True.
Yeah, I think that's you know, when you are getting started, that's something you want to think about a little bit.
That's probably a good segue as well, in terms of why I don't like LastPass quite as much. And it's their recovery process, in that they have a recovery process. So firstly, LastPass is closed source. So any of their claims, you can't really verify properly. It has pretty similar functions or features to Bitwarden, but the closed source part kind of immediately turns me off. The other, I guess, gripe that a lot of people have is that recently they changed it so you could only use one kind of device in their free version. So if you're using your desktop computer, you can't ever log in via your mobile phone, and vice versa, unless you pay for it. But the big issue that I sort of started with there was the fact that if you can't remember your LastPass login, you can actually go through the LastPass company and begin a recovery process. And what they do is they, because usually when you're logging into LastPass, you're logging in through like a browser extension or through like a web, like just a website. But that puts a cookie on your computer, puts like a, says like in this session, such and such logged in to LastPass. Now they can actually go back and access that cookie and log you back in without you needing your password. And then of course you can go change the master password once you're back in to your LastPass account. So you can essentially recover your account if you happen to forget the details. However convenient that sounds, that is an attack vector, because if they can find that session cookie and log you back in automatically without needing your password, then that means someone else could possibly do that too. So generally you want, if you ever are choosing a password manager, maybe different to the one we've recommended, which is Bitwarden, you want to make sure that they don't have a recovery process. Because if they do, it means they're not really end-to-end encrypted in a zero-knowledge fashion. So another alternative, which I've experimented with a bit, but it was quite a while ago, it's called KeePass XC. I believe there was a KeePass C, and that wasn't really being updated very much. So then someone sort of forked it because it's an open source project, and they created KeePass XC, which is being updated a bit more. So the cool parts about it is it's cross-platform, so on any kind of device, open source, like I mentioned just before. There's no built-in cloud storage, though, so you must actually maintain the database file, which is encrypted, on whatever devices you want to be able to use the password manager for. And they have a way of syncing it. So if you change one database, as in like you change a password on one of those devices, once you've moved it over to the others, it'll kind of smartly synchronize and make sure you don't like duplicate or delete a password unintentionally. But it's just, I don't know, I don't like the idea of having to keep a database of my passwords with me wherever I go. And if I lose a couple of those devices at the same time, I might actually be left without my passwords anymore. And you can do that feature with Bitwarden anyway. So if I wanted a database file, just download it from Bitwarden and do it in an offline fashion. So
yeah, or if you wanted to self-host, you could do Bitwarden as well.
Exactly right, yep. So look, those are two alternatives. I don't think they're much of alternatives when Bitwarden does everything that they do for cheaper, with usually a bit more functionality as well. But worthwhile considering if you're looking at others.
Sounds like if you're a bit of a tinkerer, maybe KeePass XE will be an option.
That's it. So how do we suggest people transition to a password manager if they were to do so?
Yeah, I think with all of this stuff, it's just get it set up and just maybe just do one account in it. So obviously the first step is doing the master password, thinking about how you're going to back up your two-factor. So I guess my question for you, Justin, is so let's say you do your master password, you set up Google Authenticator or Aegis or whatever. What happens if you lose your phone? How do you get that 2FA back?
Yeah, so with Aegis, there is actually a really good backup feature which lets you create, I believe it's just a file because I did this very recently, of all of the two-factor authentication, I don't know what you'd call them, entries in your Aegis. And then you can just load that into a new Aegis phone. You would probably store that Aegis file, like that database, you might store it in your Bitwarden.
Well, would you though? Because that's what you need to get into Bitwarden.
Yeah.
I think this step is a little bit something you need to think through, because that's something you need to store somewhere else that's not in Bitwarden. Bitwarden is super convenient for storing all sorts of secret stuff, except for the Bitwarden password and the backup of the 2FA, right?
True, yeah. So like I was saying before, if you were to have a two-factor authentication for Bitwarden, you'd want to store that hard copy, but you want to keep it separate from the password for Bitwarden. I guess what I was thinking there was that all the other two-factor authentications have, you could store that.
You could back that up
in Bitwarden. I mean, that's still not the best practice because you're pairing all the passwords with, say, your Gmail, or hopefully you're using something else like ProtonMail with the two-factor authentication. But there's levels to privacy and convenience sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. I guess the take-home point is that whatever you put into two-factor authentication app like Aegis, you want to have that backed up somewhere. You want to have all those recovery codes written down or stored somewhere securely that you can access without too many other passwords or two-factor authentication steps in the way that'll kind of hamstring you.
You definitely want to remember that you can't call Bitwarden and tell them to turn off 2FA.
No, that's right.
So you're responsible for that. So if you do go down the 2FA path or a YubiKey, just make sure you've got the backup scenario planned out. And, you know, like for me, the easiest way is to store most of my encrypted stuff is just in Bitwarden. But this is one thing that you can't store in Bitwarden.
That's right.
I think just taking some time to set that stuff up. And it doesn't have to be incredibly secure when you first do it. There is that website that can help you. I forget the name of where you put dice numbers in it. gives you some words. I don't know if you remember the name of that website.
I don't, but yeah. Whenever I need to do something like that, I just use Ian Coleman's BIP39 wallet recovery kit, yep. Which basically you can generate, and it's all open source, and you can take it offline and have it on an air-gapped computer. There's like lots of things you can do with that to make it extra secure, but it'll just literally generate a seed phrase as long as you want it to be, and then you can use those if you want.
Yeah. So basically, you know, the first step is figure out what your master password's going to be.
Yep.
This is something that I use probably every day, sometimes several times a day, so I can remember mine. So it is something you're going to use a lot. So, you know, you might think that that might affect how you design it. And then what email would you use, Justin? Would you use an alias, or what do you recommend?
It really depends, because you need to make it memorable for yourself.
Yep.
So I have used an email that isn't associated with any other email that I have. Interestingly, it's not an alias, but it could just as easily be an alias, to be honest. But I would say that the point is that you don't want it to be an email that someone else knows that exists, because then if they know you use something like Bitwarden, they already automatically have like half of your login details, or maybe a third if you've got two-factor authentication. So they've got the login username or the login email, which you don't want them to have. So something different, please, whether it's an alias or not, depends.
Yeah, so something unique, because I guess, you know, this does seem to be the most common tool.
Yeah.
So someone who discovers your email might think, well, it's pretty likely they use Bitwarden.
Yeah.
And they might try and crack it with that email. So, yeah, you might want to think about it. Again, there's that trade-off. Do you use like a really unique alias that you can't remember? Probably not. It's got to be secure. But, so then you've got to decide your email, your master password, and then you just really go to bitwarden.com, setting it up, adding the extensions to Firefox, the app to your phone, if that's how you want to do it.
Yep.
And then what I'd suggest is probably going to something not that important. Like I'm thinking like, I don't know, like a newspaper website or something that's not that important, like not your email, not your bank.
Mm.
And then working out how to put the password in. One thing I noticed when I first was setting up passwords is that I'd sort of start setting it up and then do something and come back and then realize that I hadn't saved and I'd lost everything. So you've kind of got there's a bit of a trick to how you actually set them up, and just make sure you've saved it so that you've got the password there, and then you copy it across. So when you put it into the website where you're putting the password in, make sure you're copying exactly what you think you are.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a trial and error in there, I think, from experience in terms of doing the first couple. So yeah, don't do something where it's like really important, you know, that you know, and you know, most cases you can recover your password anyway with email.
Exactly.
I just set that up, just do one or two. And then every couple of days you'll realize, oh, I'm logging in with a password from somewhere else. Just transfer that to Bitwarden. And it's really good. Like it'll, if you put your password in, it'll ask if you want to save it.
Mm.
So you can do that. Although I would recommend setting up a brand new unique password as long as you can. And which is a much more secure way to do it. But yeah, just getting started one side at a time.
That's right. I think that's the way to do it. Gradually set up your Bitwarden account. Like you say, I think the main points there are use an email address that's unique, but obviously memorable enough to you. Whatever password you choose, have that basically backed up somewhere physically. And if you use a two-factor authentication, which is a good idea, have the recovery for that backed up physically as well, separately from the password. And the way to transition across is, trial and error but try it with something that you're allowed to make an error on. So something that's not totally significant to lose access to. But then gradually just do it whenever you need to log into an account.
Yeah.
And when you do transfer those passwords and email addresses or usernames over to Bitwarden, generate a new secure, unique password each time you do it too. Don't just transfer your login details across to Bitwarden. Actually put a unique password for each of those logins as well, which is a bit of an extra step, but that's the whole point of having the password manager in the first place.
Yeah, but now that I've got it set up, I honestly couldn't live without it. Like it's just part of the way I use the internet.
Definitely.
And if you listen to the episode we did on emails and email aliases, essentially I'm using an alias and a Bitwarden password every time I set up a new login, a new account with whatever I'm doing. And it just becomes a habit. Mm. So it's a bit clunky initially, but after a while, you look back in 6 months and think, wow, like how did I live without this tool? It's so useful and so easy, and yet my security is so much higher.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's probably one of the few low-hanging fruit that improves security immensely, but actually adds convenience to your life, which is just a beautiful, and I never really thought of it that way, but now I think I've just taken it for granted because I've used it for so long.
Yeah.
But it does really, it has made my life much simpler in that regard.
It definitely does. And I think another thing I'd just like to say is, and I said it on the email one, I think it is important to pay for the services that you use.
Yep.
Because you want big companies like Bitwarden to be sustainable and to keep making cool features. And, if you're doing hosting with them, they're paying for that service. I think it's important to contribute to that. So once you do decide the one that you want to use, You know, just go to the basic plan, and it's really quite affordable. I can't remember how much it is.
I think it was like $12 US per year, so yeah. Like $20 per year. And I've more or less got most of my inheritance planning set up through that.
Yeah.
Rather than saying I need to trust all these people with all my logins, it's like it's only if I disappear that they can then get access to those logins. So that just, it's a peace of mind for me, essentially, to know that that's there, but don't have to, you know, put too much trust now.
Yeah, I mean, that's nothing in the grand scheme of things. So I think, yeah, just with all this stuff, once you select the solution you think is the best, maybe donate or subscribe to their basic plan just to make sure that they've got money covering their costs.
Yeah, I think it's a fair suggestion. Any other points before we finish off?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, it's just, you know, all these things are about getting started and just figuring out the best way that this can work in your life. Like, you may not have such a threat around security, and so maybe you don't need the 2FA. Like, just thinking that stuff through, I think, is important.
Mm.
But yeah, just getting started slowly, and it can seem like an onerous task when you're really busy and you haven't got much time, but just taking one step, like you can install in the extension, and then, you know, when you're going for a walk, maybe you're thinking about how's the best way to write a password that is memorable for you but hard to crack and those sorts of things. And honestly, like, yeah, you just, it's so much easier once you've got it. It's just very easy to use the internet, and, you know, if you ever have to change computers or start a new job, it's incredible. Like, just open up a browser, Bitwarden, done. Everything you need is right there.
That's right, yeah. Do it gradually, because security and privacy, unfortunately, are one of those things that when you eventually need it, it's a luxury you can't afford because it's too late. So yes. Even if you don't feel like you need it now, there may come a time that you do. And for most people, there will definitely come a time that you do. So just chip away at it. Even if you do this as a, similar to what we said with the email privacy strategy, do it over like 6, 12, 18 months. Don't feel like it's something you have to do all now. Just do it very gradually, and it's a painless process. But it's more reliable when you do it gradually over the long term too.
Yeah, and I think once you feel comfortable, put a really strong password on your email, probably a 2FA as well, because you can back up the 2FA from your email in Bitwarden, because the email is the place that allows you to reset all of your other passwords.
That's right.
So the email is the thing you want to keep really secure.
True. Well, if you've got any queries, or if you go about this perhaps in a different way, please reach out. We're always happy to discuss and to learn more. And to hear how you've gone with that journey. Otherwise, thanks for listening. The place to reach out to us would be on the Hardblock Twitter, which is HardblockBTC. And until next time.